Hey guys, welcome back to Unleashed, and wow, what a great week. I mean, it was cooler temps are starting to finally come in. We got some rain. We haven't had rain in, I mean, it's been a long time. Eric, did you guys get rain down in Carmel?
Yes, it rained. So Saturday, I decided to go ahead and close the pool, and we just beat it. So then Sunday, the rain started, and it's just been kind of raining ever since.
I was on my phone last night. I don't know what time it was, 7:30 or something, and I started seeing a post that there was a tornado up in Yorktown.
Yeah, man, I reached out to Randy Davis, who's another one of our podcasts, because he's up in that Jay County area, and he said their high school took some damage, but...
Wow. Yeah, well, my youngest goes to school at Yorktown, and so I think it was the TK Constructors office building, maybe, in that little play, housing development. It got hit, and I guess it took out, maybe it was the east wall, and then the structure collapsed, but, I mean, it was close to home. It wasn't too far away, but wow. I mean, everything can change in a heartbeat. And if you're a Steelers fan, which I am, things have changed a little bit this year. Can you believe if you are a Steelers fan? Some of you probably hate them, but I'm sorry for that. Man, they're 3-0, and they have a brand new quarterback in there this year who used to be with Chicago, and he is just thriving in this new system. So if you love football like I do, wow, it's kind of a fun season so far. Eric, you're not a football fan.
Not really.
No. Nope. You know, everybody has that passion, that thing that they love to do. You know, today we're going to be talking a little bit about kind of where we were last week with Don Higgins, for those of you that have a passion for the outdoors, passion for hunting and that kind of stuff. But I went to B-Dubs yesterday, and I got some wings, and I was watching football because the game I wanted to see wasn't going to be on our local stations, and I don't want to pay the money to get like the NFL, whatever that thing is, you can get all the games, ticket or whatever it's called. And, you know, I'm working on a new book right now, and it's about our purpose. It's called The Purpose Funnel. And I was sitting there, and I was taking some notes during halftime on my phone, just kind of looking around the room with all these guys. I mean, it was just packed with guys. You know, they all got their jerseys on, whether it was New Orleans or Chicago or the Colts or Pittsburgh, whoever. And they're passionate about this stuff. And Stacy had come, and she sat with me up until the first half, and she ran to go get groceries and stuff. And as I'm watching the second half, the guy sitting in the corner booth, he just almost didn't look like he kind of fit. He was a little bit uncomfortable, I would say. Maybe that's the right word. And he comes walking over to me. And he said, "Are you Brent?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, "Henderson?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "You used to be in music, weren't you?" And I said, "I was." He goes, "Man, I was a huge fan." And I'm like, "Wow, that was a long time ago. You got a great memory if you remember that." And he said, "Oh," he says, "man, your music impacted me." He says, "Music has always had an effect on me." And so he says, "So what are you doing now?" And I said, "Well, I do a lot of work in the outdoor industry with a lot of, you know, bow companies and outdoor manufacturers. And I do a lot of wild game dinners and, you know, beast feasts and men's retreats and stuff like that." And so we began to talk, and I said, "You know, it's interesting, you know, how God has been able to take all these different things that I love, my passions, and kind of mix them together in this purpose that he's given me in what I do." And I said, "So what do you do?" He said, "Well," he kind of looked around, and because I was sitting back in the bar area, I don't have a problem with going back and sitting there watching these games. And he said, kind of looking around, he goes, "Well, I'm a pastor." And I kind of laughed, and I said, "Why are you so quiet?" And we both started to laugh. And we got into this amazing conversation about, you know, the passions that we have is where a lot of times we are going to be with guys that love the same kind of stuff we do. We put ourselves in those arenas where those guys are going to be. Some of them might be believers, some of them might not be believers. But what did Jesus do? I mean, he was going to these places where there were some pretty rough, tough characters. And he wasn't there to, you know, to get drunk and do that kind of stuff. He was there to live life, you know, to be there when they're hurting, to speak truth into their lives, to feed and clothe and all those kind of things. So as we're kind of talking about this, you know, I said, I have a lot of friends that are musicians that play in church, and they also go and they play a lot of these clubs, and we call them musicianaries. You know, they're going out to some of the places that might never know who Jesus is, and they get into some of these great conversations on their breaks. I said, that's kind of how I feel sometimes when I go to some of these places. And I said, first of all, I'm not going there to try to convert somebody. I'm trying there to go to live life. And at this instance, what I'm talking about, I was going to watch this football game with some other guys that were around that loved the team that I loved. Like I said, it was the Steelers. And as I'm watching the second half, the TV's kind of, you know, they're all over the place. and I can't get the game. So I was kind of watching this and a bunch of games. And two guys came over and they sat beside me, but just a little bit down from me. And they were cheering for Pittsburgh. And I went, oh, we got some Steelers fans. So at one point, some big play happened. And I kind of, you know, I was clapping. Nobody else was because they're all watching the Colts game or the Bears game here. And these two guys heard me and they turned around and they said, you a Steelers fan? I said, I am. I said, I grew up in Pennsylvania. They said, we did too. So we get this conversation going on. And he said, what brought you to Indiana? And I said, well, I went to college here in Anderson. I went to this university. And the one guy said, I went there for a few months. And they kept trying to convert me, even at my lunch table. He goes, I don't need any of that. You know, and he used a colorful word. And he says, I don't need that stuff. And so as the conversation got going on, he starts talking about his passions. Not only does he love football, he loves baseball. And his hero when he was a kid growing up was Roberto Clemente. Many of you can remember Roberto Clemente. And he was one of my heroes, too. I think it was the 71 World Series when the Pirates won that year. And Clemente was given this, I think it was a challenger? I think it was a challenger. And my buddy, who I hung out with in high school, has a car dealership down in Daytona Beach. And he was able to get a hold of that car and restored it. And he takes it around and shows it. And I was telling him the story about this car. And he's like, no way. And he was just into cars. So I'm taking my phone out and I'm showing pictures of stuff. And then he says, well, what do you do? And I said, well, I said, I work a lot in the outdoor industry. He goes, do you like to fish? I said, I love to fish. And so he's telling me about where he's getting ready to go. And he said, can I get your phone number? I want to send you some pictures of these fish I'm going to be catching. I said, that'd be awesome. We talked the rest of the time about, you know, the games, and he leaves. And I get this message this morning from this guy, and some of the colorful words that he was using, he used a few more of those things, but it was normal talk for him. And I was telling my wife about it. And I said, you know what I love? When people can come to you just as they are, I love that. They're not trying to pretend to be somebody different. And, you know, if I'd have jumped right in right away and said something like, well, I'm an ordained pastor, which I am, he probably would have turned and never talked to me again. But within our purpose, God has gifted us with some things that we're passionate about. I'm sitting around looking at this room yesterday, and these guys were just loving the game, and they're cheering. And I talked to the one pastor. I said, you know, there's only two emotions that men really can experience without getting blowback. And I said, those are two things. I said, one is joy, like what you're seeing and hear. And the other one is anger, what you're seeing and hear when their team doesn't do so well. I said, any other emotion we kind of get ridiculed for. But I said, this is a place where a lot of guys come together because they can express what they're feeling and they can feel the sense of brotherhood. And this guy that came over to me, that's what he was experiencing. And I don't even know that he realized it. He was experiencing what it's like to be with someone with like passions. And so, you know, you pray for that guy. Like we prayed a couple of weeks ago for the one man that was about to take his life and heard this podcast. Pray for this guy. You know, that whether it's me or anybody else, it doesn't matter. That somehow this door will open up for this guy to be curious and saying, there's something different about you. And I get questions all the time. Can I really take the stuff that I love and can I work that into my purpose? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you think about some of the things, if someone goes, well, what about hunting? Well, last week we had Don Higgins on here. You know, he's a farmer, but he's also one of the greatest experts on white-tailed deer. And he not only does that to educate hunters, but he also has a ministry with it where a lot of guys have come to Christ. The same thing with what I do. I've seen probably over 20,000 guys now come to Christ at these game dinners that I do because we share a like passion. They come to hear what's going on. We talk about the adventure, and eventually we talk about the one who made all this stuff that we have. Pretty powerful stuff. But anyhow, well, last week we had Don Higgins on, and that podcast has now become the number one viewed podcast of the last 60, this will be the 63rd episode. I mean, it 10 times the amount of numbers. And I was going, what? I said to Eric, I messaged him yesterday. I said, man, this podcast is just blown up. And I said, it's at least 10 times more than the best podcast we've ever had. And that happened in 3 days' time that it started getting those numbers. I really believe it's because we tapped into some passions. And for the guys that love hunting, love the outdoors, especially bow hunters or whitetail hunters, I'm going to do a little series here. For this. It's going to be called Whitetail Wisdom, and I'm going to do it on a few different things over the next couple of weeks because bow season, you know, deer season is getting ready to come in here in the Midwest and in a lot of places. So Yeah, you absolutely can mix your passions in with your purpose, because that's what draws people to what you have to say. Okay, let's get started here today. So for those of you that love bow hunting, I just put up a new article on bowhunting.net. And if you are into bow hunting, man, I highly encourage you to go bowhunting.net. There's all kinds of great articles on there. No matter what bow you shoot, what broadhead, arrow, you're going to learn a lot of stuff on there. I had an article up there a few months ago about making sure you have a plan when you go hunting, that you're letting others know what stand you're hunting, where you're going to be, what time you're going in or coming out. Man, anything can happen in a heartbeat. But we were going through the YouTube and noticing, man, all of a sudden we hit, 100 viewers, 500 viewers, 1,000 viewers, and I don't even know where it's at now. And I think we had a question on there. Eric, do you remember what the question was? One of the guys was asking. It was something about, I know what it was.
Yeah.
He says, you and Don talked about not hunting on, very many October, early season mornings. And he said, why is that? He's a new hunter and he kind of wondered why. And so, for me, I think it's several things. One of them is, deer are bedding down, they're out in the fields at night, and then during the daytime, they're going to their other locations to bed down where it's cooler and safer. And when you walk through those fields, you're heading into the woods, you're educating a lot of deer of where your entrance or your exit is. And so we have to be really, really, careful about what we're doing with that kind of stuff, because you don't want to be educating these deer. So some of the things that I come up with, a little bit of a list. A lot of hunters don't like ticks, right? They don't like chiggers. I hate them. One time I got chiggers so bad, my buddy and I did, and I was at 3 o'clock in the morning in the bathtub, and my phone rings, and he says, dude, what are you doing right now? And I'm like, this is weird. It's 3 in the morning. I said, I'm sitting in a bathtub. He said, so am I. And now we're getting really weird. He said, dude, I'm covered in chiggers. He says, what can I do to get rid of these? And so we're both trying to figure this out. So a lot of hunters don't want to go in early season because you do have chiggers and ticks that are kind of still hanging out, and they are miserable. The foliage can be pretty heavy still in early October, and so it can be a little harder to see deer, when they're coming in. And so your shooting lanes, you want to make sure you're going to get those shooting lanes, especially if you are going to hunt early October. You want to make sure you're in there at least 3 weeks before you're ever going to hunt that stand. And I'm going to talk about scent here in just a second and why that is so important. You can also get the October lull. When the bachelor groups are broken up and it just seems like the bucks have disappeared, where did they go? And so you can put a lot of hours on the stand early season. And really what you're doing is educating deer a lot of times. And you're also getting sweated up. There can be some really brutal hot days in early October. And it's not only your breath that is smelling. And we always think about, pumping gas at a gas station, the smell you have in your boots. Well, yeah, of course. You're going to get busted with stuff like that. But your sweat glands really put out a heavy odor. And the more you get sweated up, the more you're going to stink. So if you are hunting early mornings, man, walk slower to your stand. Try to take a way that's not going to be walking where the deer are going to be moving. Because as you're walking through the woods, I want you to think about the way that a motorboat goes on a lake, and you see that wake spreading out. As you look back, you see that wake going out farther and farther and farther. That's exactly what's happening with your specific human scent trail. That's what's happening. And as that scent is moving out, it's literally sticking to things like the leaves on the trees or the bushes around you, and it'll be there for quite a while until it dissipates and it's gone. So you might not think you're leaving a trail, but you absolutely are. You have things like ground scent when you're walking in. When they're training canines to go after some of the bad guys, ground scent, where they're walking, whereas it's stirring up the ground, it lets off a specific smell. Well, you got to be thinking about this. What else do you have walking in the woods that would make that big of a footprint, leaving up that much ground smell? Nothing. I mean, you've got coyotes, you've got raccoons, you've got possums, skunks, deer, rabbits, squirrels, but nothing is letting out that amount of scent. So for me, I really just don't like to hunt early October mornings because I'm taking a chance of educating a lot of deer that I really am hoping I can take later that month. Evenings is a little bit different when I'm getting to my stand because they're already in their bedding areas. They're going to be moving back to the feeding areas. So when I'm entering the woods, I'm making sure as I'm going in that I'm not going to be anywhere near where their bedding area is. I'm trying to get them as they're on their way back out to where those fields are going to be. So I'm either hunting, you know, a stand on the edge of the field or somewhere in a staging area, which is what they do right before they come out. They'll get up into some of those areas and just kind of feed a little bit and scent check the field. That's exactly what they're doing before they ever step out. So I don't know. Hopefully that answers, you know, your question. Oh, let's see here. You know, a whitetail, let's talk about this for a second. I was mentioning about scent control. A whitetail deer, as Don and I were talking about last year, they have almost 300 million olfactory receptors for smelling things. Dogs have about 220 million, and we have five. I mean, that's how different it is. And just because you can't smell you, you might think you're safe. But when you're thinking you've got 5 million and a deer has almost 300 million, what they are capable of smelling would blow your mind. So again, when you're going in, you really want to make sure that you're keeping your traffic away from the areas where you know they're going to be bedded or going to be feeding. So you're going to try to get some of those areas, either the staging grounds as they're coming out, or if you do go in the mornings, you know, take a different route from a way that you know that they've been in the fields at night. It might take you an extra 10, 15, maybe 20 minutes to get where you're going, but absolutely it's worth it. And if you have anything like, you know, a shallow stream that you can walk the last 75, 100 yards, you know, a lot of times that's where they'll lose scent. As soon as you step in the water, your scent is getting into the water, but as it's drifting and it's kind of collecting on the rocks, it dissipates much faster and doesn't hold your specific human body odor like it would if you're walking in the dirt or touching leaves. And a lot of guys, when they're going in, you know, they won't wear their gloves. I mean, I understand not wearing a hat sometimes, but make sure you're not touching your head on branches on your way in. Again, the oils from your skin are sticking to those, and it's leaving your specific human scent, which deer can smell probably at about a quarter mile away. And if you have a little bit of a wind going with you, it's going to be closer. They can even say up to a mile. That they can smell. I know Charlie Alzheimer, you know, he's passed away now, and I'm going to talk about him in one of these episodes, a conversation we had. He said that when a deer is an estrus, they can smell that just on a calm day up to about 420 paces. So that's quite a ways that a whitetail can pick up on that. But again, if you're going to be going in, you know, your shooting lanes, you need to make sure that you've kind of pruned those out way ahead of time. And I would say 3 weeks again. If you're going to be hunting a stand and you want to make sure your shooting lanes are cleared out, do that about 3 weeks, not just because you're leaving your human scent when you go in, but as you are pruning leaves and trees, there's a specific scent that is released that wouldn't be like that had those things not been you know, torn apart, cut down, drug around. So they can smell that. And anything that is not normal for their area absolutely draws attention to it. And that's something that you don't want to have. You know, another thing I was thinking about too, if you're going in the afternoons, mid-October, late October, whatever, to hunt, you know, the way that we walk to our tree stand, if there would happen to be a deer who might be up feeding or in a bedding area somewhere that you didn't realize he was bedded and he can hear you, the way that we walk into the woods, there's nothing that walks like a human. You know, when you're sitting there and you have a guy coming through the woods and you're like, oh, great, you heard him coming. You don't even hear a whitetail until he's almost on top of you, and it's that unmistakable, unpredictable, ch, ch, and you know that sound. If you've hunted long enough, you can sit there in the morning as it's getting light and close your eyes, and you can tell what you're hearing. You can hear the turkeys as they begin to tree talk. You can tell when a squirrel is first coming down the tree. You can hear a raccoon heading back to bed after he's been out all night. You can hear that sound of a possum as he kind of makes a lot of shuffling sounds as he's walking through the woods. When you've hunted long enough, you know all the different sounds. Well, think about it. That's where a deer lives. This is his living room. This is where he spends all of his time. He knows every sound and every smell and every sight in that area where he makes his home. So what I love to be able to do when I'm walking to my stand in an afternoon is I don't do a normal gait. I'll walk and I'll shuffle my feet. Sometimes I'll take a turkey diaphragm call and I'll put it in my mouth. And as I'm walking, I'll do some little putts and purrs. I'll be kind of kicking leaves like I'm scratching on the ground, just like turkeys would. Turkeys and deer are very, very alert. A deer's smell, like I said, is better than anything out there. Well, a turkey's sense with his eyes, as you know, are, I mean, it's unbeatable. I mean, beating a turkey's eyes, it's almost impossible. And they pay attention. They know. I've watched them in fields before. When a turkey would start to start getting nervous because there's something else, those deer will stop. And all of a sudden, you'll see them start doing the stomp. And when he puts that foot down in that way, it's letting out a specific odor that lets the other ones know around him something is up. So I'll take that turkey call with me walking in. I'll kind of shuffle step my way into the stand. And when I get up in my stand, as I'm getting, you know, I'm hanging my bow up and I'm getting everything situated, if I happen to make some kind of a sound that I know didn't sound like an animal and that it could be picked up by a deer not too far away, I'll take my ball cap off and I'll keep that mouth call in. And I'll do like a burp, 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 like a fly down, smacking my head on my leg the same time I'm doing it. So the deer thinks, well, that sound came from some turkeys and that one just flew down. That might sound crazy, but I've seen it work. I had three does bedded down up at Salamone Reservoir about an hour north here in central Indiana. And when I got back up in there, as I just sat down, I saw this tall grass about 40 yards away. How they didn't hear me get in my stand, I don't know. But I was doing something, and I made a sound, and all of a sudden, that's how I saw it, because their ears all popped up. And one of them stood up, probably the maternal doe. And as she stood up, she's watching. And so I just started talking like that. Pretty soon, I saw her tail wag. She laid back down. About 2 hours later, they all get up, walk away, and of course, she passed right by my stand. And I thank her for that. But again, just do little putts and purrs when you're doing that, because it really can cover up like a multitude of sins. You know, I was hunting warthogs in Africa one time, and my PH that was with me, my professional hunting guide, we were sitting to watching out the window, and I'd watch, you know, all the animals come in to get a drink. But, you know, zebras are smart. They stay back a long ways until they know it's safe. But warthogs will come in, they'll go back, they'll come in, they'll go back. And then when they come in, they'll get down on their knees when they go to get a drink. And they'll get really skittish right when they go to do it. And I asked my PH, I said, why are warthogs so skittish when they go to get a drink? He said, if every time you went to get a drink, something bad happened to you, you'd be skittish too. So you have to remember, this is a whitetail's world. And anything that he knows, and he does know, it doesn't sound like him, look like him, smell like him, it's going to be something that's going to be an alert. So you really got to pay attention to that stuff. There's nothing more important than really trying to play the wind. Because, again, a deer's eyes aren't as good as what our eyes are. They lack a UV filter, which is really important, which I'm going to talk about next year coming up. But they might not know exactly what they're looking at. Like, you can get away with more movement sometimes in the stand than you think you can. But what you can't get away with is smell. And the other thing you can't get away with, and this is what I want to show you here in just a second, I'm going to show you a video, is having UV dyes and brighteners, you know, in your camouflage. And we touched on this a little bit last week about what UV dyes and brighteners do. So a whitetail doesn't see in all the color spectrum like we do. You know, he's not seeing orange, he's not seeing greens. The only two colors that he sees in are blue and yellow. So everything in his world is a shade of yellow, yellowish brownish color, except for the sky, which is a blue. Things that are bad for him, like poisonous plants, poisonous snakes, poisonous mushrooms. Interesting how that works. But also UV dyes and brighteners, because what that brightener does. Now let me explain something real quick. So the wavelengths of how a human see and how a deer see are totally different on the spectrum. So being that they lack a UV filter in their eye, they can pick up on UV dyes and brighteners in your clothing. Well, how do we know that? The University of Georgia did a test on this. You can go to atsko.com, and you can read this study they did. And they were able to determine what colors that whitetails can see in. And so the way that a whitetail sees lacking that, it causes the reflectance within the brighteners. Like, say you've washed your camo and tied or all or whatever, or maybe you bought the camouflage and it came with a brightener. Maybe it was made in China somewhere, and they don't always catch that. Even though the manufacturer might say, we don't want UV dyes and brighteners put in this, they might do it anyhow. And the only way you can find out is to get a black light, all right? So we were at a camp, and I don't know, Eric, do you have those two photographs that I have where there's my buddy sitting up in a tree stand? And so show the first one where he's not blue. So the photograph he's going to pull up for you right now, this is my buddy Brandon. And so he had on a set of camouflage. We were at a writer's camp in southeastern Ohio. And we had a massive black light with us. So this is like the first hour of daylight that we had. We had to get it because UV dyes and brighteners reflect most in the first hour of daylight and in the last hour of daylight. So we had him climb up on a stand we had hung, and he was sitting there. Now, this is the vision that you and I would see. You just saw his camouflage. You could see it just look like it does on the shelf. But as soon as we turned on the black light, this is what he looked like. He looked just like a glowing blue popsicle. And so everything that he was wearing instantly, because it had a UV dye and brightener within it, it just totally lit up, and he was glowing blue. And as I said to Don last week, I was talking and I said, have you ever had like that maternal, you know, doe? She comes walking up and you know you didn't make any sound, you know she didn't smell, you know, all of a sudden she looks right up. Well, chances are it's because you're glowing blue and you didn't even know it. So it's important to really be able to get that brightener out of your clothing if you do happen to have it. Go to your garage, get a little black light. You can get them at Walmart. And I'm going to show you this video here in just a second. And you're going to shine it about 2 feet away from your camo. And if you see a blue glow within it, you're going to know you're UV hot. Well, anyhow, sometimes the best way is just to show you something. So, Eric, when you've got that video, I shot this video out in Colorado with my buddy. And if you have that ready.
And you couldn't see the photos, but I did put them up there with them with the blue.
Awesome. And Oregon, I'm looking at a monitor, you guys, and Eric can see stuff, and he's probably going, Brent can't tell what I'm doing. I can't.
So this would be the product in Colorado?
No, it would be the one that says UV Killer, right there at the very bottom, the bottom one of that
UV group. Glow.
UV Glow. Yeah, there it is. So we shot this in Colorado. Now, this is my buddy Kurt Baumgartner, who had been the national sales manager for ATSCO.
Kurt Baumgartner here with ATSCO, and we're in Colorado at Elk Camp. And today we're going to talk about camouflage. And we've got four guys here in camp. Everybody's got a bundle of camouflage with them. And we're going over and checking things for ultraviolet reflection. And what we're talking about is the UV reflection that comes off the fabric. And we're going to show a little demonstration here today. And we have products, ATSCO has products that can nullify that reflectance on the camo. And we have an ultraviolet flashlight that we offer people, and this is something you're going to want to check out. You can get this from us at atsco.com. And what we're going to show here today is the reflectance that the camouflage has when it has a UV brightener in the base fabric. And you can see here how this gives off a blue hue, and you can see it on all these camos here. But we'll switch over to a camouflage here on the right hand side, and you'll see there is no blue light on that camo. So we switch from here to here.
Wow.
And you're seeing the reflectance in this
crazy
camouflage.
Yeah.
And none here. Now, to our eyes, this camouflage looks perfectly fine. This is something you could head out into the woods with, and you'd think you're perfectly concealed when you're hunting. But game animals can see the ultraviolet reflectance. Game animals cannot see red and they cannot see green, but they can see blue and they can see yellow. And reflectance off your camo reflects as blue. So whether it's an elk, a deer, any big game animal, they can see that reflectance, and that's going to alert them to your presence. So UV Killer from ATSCO is going to solve that problem. You're going to spray that on your camo, and that's going to block that. Just like you see on the camo here and on the camo on the right, it's going to block that. So go to ATSCO.com. Check out UV Killer, check out the UV light, and we can help you out with your camo.
Isn't that pretty cool?
Yeah, that's, I wish he would have sprayed it on the one kind of live to see it go away. But
well, I can do that sometime. I've got some videos actually of us doing that. I'll bring some videos in and you can see the video of us. We have the black light on and we have gloves that were UV hot. And we just start spraying the UV Killer on there and immediately just covers it all up so you don't see the glow. Man, so many guys didn't believe us until University of Georgia did the science on this and discovered they really do see it. Eric, I was out hunting in Pennsylvania one time, and I was on the edge of a field, and I had – so ATSCO also makes – this isn't – they're not sponsoring this podcast, but I just really believe in their stuff. But the UV Killer, I had a vest, an orange, blaze orange vest. It was during gun season. And they make a blaze orange vest that has no brighteners added into it. So almost all blaze orange you see has a brightener in it. It really pops. But you and I see it as orange. But remember, Whitetails don't see orange. They see the brightener showing up as blue, and it glows. They can see blue glowing more than you and I can see blaze orange. That's how, because everything else in the world is more of a shade of yellow. So that brightener just shows up out of nowhere. The only thing out there blue, except for the sky, what they're looking at probably is that. So I went out to the edge of a field, and I was hunting the edge of a field, and I had a vest on one night. And this was not their vest. It was one I just bought at the store. And something spooked these does, and they came busting, and they got about maybe 30, 40 yards running across the field right at me. And I was standing right in the edge, and they picked, whew, blew, took off, stomped, and they saw me, and I didn't move. And the wind was perfect in my favor. So I went and I got my UV vest, because I had forgotten I actually had this thing still in the wrapper, and I took it out. And I went back in the woods, and I was just in about the exact same spot. And all of a sudden, some deer came busting through. And I'm telling you what, I almost got run over. It was crazy. These things were jumping on both sides of me. They had no idea I was there. I saw a post on Facebook the other day, and this guy had a tree stand. And I don't know if I said this last week or not, but in this, he's trying to get everybody to interact with his post. And he said, "What's wrong with this stand?" So we're going, well, does it not have enough back cover? Was it not high enough? You know, what is the thing? He had an orange seat cushion on that. Well, here's the problem. He had no clue that's what was wrong with the picture. Everybody else is saying what I said, it's too low or not back cover. He said, no, it's that blaze orange seat cover I've got. The deer are going to see it. Well, the truth is, unless it was treated with a UV killer, they're not seeing it glowing like that. And that's just because we weren't educated to understand the way that a deer's eyes are. So I wrote an article a few years ago, and it was on, I think it was on hunting.net, and it might have come out in bowhunting.net as well, on how deer vision really works. It's worth the read. If I can find that article, I'll have to go back and look for it again. But again, you know, you can go get a black light from Walmart, or you can go to atsco.com, and they make that little UV light that you can order. They're not very much. And they're actually rechargeable too, because I take it with me before I ever buy my camouflage. I take it before I take it off the shelf, you better believe I'm inspecting what I'm buying to make sure it isn't UV hot. And even the bows you buy, there are some bows out there that have UV dyes and brighteners in the limbs or in the riser. And once it's covered up with that automotive finish, there's nothing you can do about it. It's there. So you want to make sure that you check all your stuff. You know, I was telling you about having another article I just put up on bowhunting.net. And for you guys that are bow hunters, you know, there's a big controversy, you know, should we use fixed broadheads or expandables, you know, and my buddy last week, Don Higgins, he is not a fan of expandable broadheads. And I understand why. And I'm from the camp, you know, whatever works for you, whatever you're most confident with, whatever you've had the best experience with. I think there can be a time and a place for both. I think like with a fixed broadhead, if I have a kind of a brushier area I'm in, I don't want to have to worry about an expandable catching a limb and opening up and wounding the deer and then not being able to find the deer. Now you got a whole bunch of problems you don't want to have. So I love those instances for being able to have a fixed broadhead. If I'm in an area that's more wide open and I don't have to worry about stuff like that, and I'm shooting enough kinetic energy, like if I'm shooting a 70-pound bow, you know, I can pretty much shoot an expandable without having to worry about the penetration. Now, there are a few broadheads out there, and I'm not going to mention them by name, that we've done the testing on. We've seen them blow apart on angled wood or shooting them through a 55-gallon drum, and the blades come apart just like you were hitting bone. So you can go on and you can find some of the testing on all these broadheads. But I've shot for a lot of broadhead companies through the years. And the one that I've, my favorite, and I've shot for some great, Sick Broadheads, S-I-K, they make some great broadheads. Swacker, a lot of guys love the Swacker broadhead. I shot for them for a while, shot for Trophy Ridge. But most of the years, you know, I've been shooting for Bear Archery almost every single year since 2006. Love their stuff, love their customer service. But the broadhead that I settled on for me was the Grim Reaper. And I just want to kind of show you a little bit of why. So when you look at this broadhead, this is the three-blade Hades. It's an amazing chisel tip on this thing. I can drop this in a piece of wood. It'll just stick instantly. It's 35,000s. The blades are just surgically sharp. But here's one of the differences I love about their blades. This is also sharp on the very back. So if you don't happen to get a pass-through for whatever reason, if that deer catches that arrow on something he's running and it pulls it back out, it cuts a whole new wound channel because this is also sharpened on the back. So that's the three-blade Hades. I just grabbed a couple for my shelf. Let me see what else I have here. I have one called the Carney 4. Well, what's better than a three blade? Well, four blades. Same type of a chisel tip on this or a point, but on the back, again, it's sharpened, but you have now four wound channels. So that's this one's great elk, and I love that for elk.
Called the Carney?
Yeah, the Carney 4. Instead of the carnivore, the Carney 4.
So the first one was Hades.
Yeah.
Who comes up with these names?
I know.
Yeah.
You know, Will Primos came on with bear for a while, and he came out with some names for some of these bear bows. It was only Will Primos could have come up with. It was pretty funny. This is one. This is really neat because it's a combination of both a fixed blade and an expandable. This is their hybrid. And so you've got two blades to get that really good penetration, cut on contact tip, and you've got those two cutter blades are going right in and cutting a wound channel. But then once it hits, these snap back into place. And just like the Carney 4, now you have four wound channels. It's pretty amazing. So you get a little bit more of that follow-through with the kinetic energy because you have that cut-on-contact tip to begin with. You know, some other ones they make some smaller expandables. These are great heads. Maybe you're shooting a little less poundage. Maybe you're shooting 50 or 60. And that's a pretty good wound channel right there. I don't know if you can really see that. But then they have one called their Whitetail Special. Now, if you're shooting pretty hefty bow like I am, this thing is nasty. I mean, look at that. Look at the wound channel on the size of that thing. You can see that. That's a massive cut going through there. And their motto is, you know, watch them drop. Well, I can tell you, I've shot everything from, you know, 800, 900 pound zebra over in Africa to whitetails to 500 pound hogs. And those things really, when they say you watch them drop, you know, you really can watch them drop. And that article I just put on bowhunting.net, you can go in and watch it. It says, Why I Love Grim Reaper Broadheads. You can read that article. It just came up yesterday. Well, anyway, let me just kind of go back to where we were here. I don't want to keep on going too much with what we've got going. But I was starting off with, you know, can I really use my passions? I mean, it's obvious when I start talking about this stuff, how much I absolutely love deer hunting. You know, when I'm sitting in that tree stand and I know the very first day when I'm up there and I hear that unmistakable sound of a whitetail approaching my stand for the first time, my heart's going to get going. I love that. You know, after I've had a number of deer pass me, I get a little bit more settled in. But I don't want that feeling to ever go away. It's, you know, like the night before Christmas when you're a kid and you can't sleep because you know the next day is going to hold something new that you haven't seen yet and you're excited for what could happen. It's the same thing with hunting. You have no idea what you're going to see, or the stories that are going to be created out of this stuff. And so maybe this is something to where you want to be able to use, you know, your passions in such a way that can reach, you know, others for Christ. And it's not about, you know, going out and giving them some tract, love Jesus or burn. God doesn't. It's like some people think, it's almost like if a man put a gun to a woman's head and say, marry me. You know, she probably would because she's scared to death. But God doesn't do that with us. You know, he gave us the freedom to love him. And that's what people are looking for. Like that guy that was in the bar, he said, you know, I went to that college, that Christian college for a little while until he started trying to convert me. He goes, I don't need any of that stuff. Well, you know, what's the approach? You know, Jesus got into their world. It was an amazing thing. But he was there and he helped them untangle the stuff that they were believing that was causing them pain. And he was able to give them truth. You know, I was thinking about, you know, in the same way that those UV killer spray can get rid of that blue glow that you're seeing. And by the way, let me say something too. A lot of guys think that the same company, ATSCO, they make a product called Sport Wash. They go, oh, I use that. It covers up the UV. No, it doesn't. I've been working for them for years. That opens up the dye sites, okay? It really gets your garment cleaner, and it doesn't. It says the UV, and with a line through it, it means it doesn't add any UV dyes or brighteners. So what you have to do is you have to wash your camo in that first before you spray it in UV killer, because now you've opened up the dye sites. So when you spray UV killer on it, it covers it up like painting a barn so you can't see it anymore. But in the same way that UV killer, you know, when you apply it correctly, it's going to keep you from getting busted. You're not going to be able to see that blue glow, what's happening there. And I think the same thing, I was thinking about this. You know, I always love to say, you know, how could I tie this in with our walk with God? You know, the only way that we can get rid of those negative emotions that we struggle with. And sometimes we bury them. We can't see them. But when they come to the surface, like that blue glow, and you can actually see what's happening, how do we get rid of, you know, those negative emotions that we're feeling, like lust or jealousy or rage or whatever? You know, you have to go back and look at the thought that made you feel that way. And then somehow you have to go back and untangle the lie you bought into. Well, how do I know it was a lie? And I've talked about this before. When that thought pops into your head, if it causes you to have negative emotions, unhealthy emotions, you know somewhere in that thought that there's a lie twisted in with it. And the only way you can get rid of that, like the only way you can get rid of that glow, is you have to treat it. And how do we treat it? We treat it with the Word of God. That's what we do. We have to go back. Romans 12:2 tells us to take every, or that'd be 2 Corinthians 10:6 says, take every thought captive. You have to think through what you're thinking. And Romans 12:2, it tells us that we are transformed by the renewing of our mind. So, you know, maybe like the podcast a couple of weeks ago where the one guy was really struggling with those thoughts that he wanted to take his own life. You know, you had to look at the emotions he was probably feeling. He was probably feeling abandoned, feeling alone, not good enough, all those different things. But what is it that he was thinking? You know, that's something he has to go back and match up. Just being able to say to him, you need to know something. You are loved right where you're at, just the way you are. People like the guy at the bar need to know that. They need to know it's not about your performance, the things you've done or the things that you will do, but it's all about what Jesus has already done. And sometimes through our passions, you know, we're able to open a door to speak into someone's life like we couldn't had we not had those kind of conversations with them or be in a place where we can actually have those kind of conversations. So again, you know, it's for the stronger brother who's able to go and do something like that, my hat's off to you. Maybe that's part of what your ministry is going to be. But I do know this, that God has an amazing plan for your life. And just like you can see that UV at a distance in something that's glowing, when we begin to follow God, he lights that path for us. It's almost like following the breadcrumbs. Once we get to know who he is and know his voice when he speaks to us, we can follow the path that he has for us. Well, guys, let me just kind of wrap this up. You know, if you want more information about, you know, maybe your purpose or ministry, or maybe coming and speaking for an event to draw your guys in, maybe that's part of your purpose is putting on an event where you can bring these guys all together to learn more about hunting or adventure. That's something that I speak for all the time. If you want more information, you can go to unleashed.men. There's a contact page in there. You can reach out to me. There's also a couple other things. One is called Unleash Plus. I don't talk about this much, but there's all kinds of more information. Subscription site. It's $1.99 a month. All kinds of whitetail wisdom. You can get my book, Into the Wilds, for free on that download, and tons of other stuff. And also, if you're looking for a ministry that you really believe in and you can see how it can reach guys that want to know God or maybe don't know God yet, you can go through the website with unleash.men, and where it says donations on there, support, it'll take you right to the website. It is a 501c3, and you can donate there, and it'll be a tax write-off. But know that you are supporting this ministry and other churches that we're able to go and speak for that maybe can't afford to be able to bring in a speaker. So use your passions. Look for those God-ordained moments, just like you would if you were going in the woods and you're planning a hunt to looking for that one deer. Keep your eyes open for those men that might be seeking to know God. They're there. And if you can set up an environment that attracts them like a feeder would for a deer, grace is an amazing thing because it does lead us to repentance and to obedience. So reflect Christ and stop reflecting your UV dyes and brighteners. Treat that stuff. All right, guys, we'll see you next time.